light out, everybody.
Everybody to the Radcast I am so used to saying 5 weeks of fright. They have changed it on me. I don't do well with change over the course of 200 years, so you can imagine how I'm handling change over the last few days. Surprisingly well, actually. I've only hyperventilated twice today, and I've been awake for an hour and a half. That is what I call progress. Anyway, welcome to the Radcast Halloween 2022. I am Count Yuli. What the hell was that? Is somebody down there? I have a sack full of doorknobs, and it's finally light enough for me to swing. You do not want to mess with me. I have pointy fangs. Somewhere in my bathroom!
Hello, Yuli!
I think I broke my arm!
Yuli, are you alright?
Boris?
Yes, Yuli, my friend. It is I, Count Boris.
Have you been sent here to kill me?
Of course not, old friend. Let me teleport you back up here.
Are you sure you're not trying to kill me? Joke's on you, chucklehead. I'm not worth much at all.
Oh, Yuli, you never fail to make me laugh.
Well, I'm glad I'm some slapstick clown here to amuse you. Boris, not that I'm not happy to see you, but what the hell are you doing here?
Yuli, I've come bearing good news from the Vampire Council.
The Vampire Council? For those of you not familiar with Boris here, let me catch you up to speed. My first appearance on the Radcast, they saddled me with Count Boris here as a co-host. But as it usually goes, you're around someone long enough, their persistent and annoying optimism wears you down, and you find yourself becoming friends. And this was before I knew he was on the Vampire Council, so you know it's a genuine friendship. Boris, what is the good news?
Yuli, after the council heard you'd be entrusted with hosting another year of Halloween shows, they sent me here to say they procured sponsors for you.
What? Sponsors? Wowie zowie! I'm going to start getting paid to do this crap.
That is one way of looking at it, my friend. You will also be helping small businesses get exposure.
There it is. See, there it is. I was waiting for the catch. Small businesses? Damn it! Why can't we do something like a famous soft drink, or maybe computers? That's where the real money is. Here, watch this. You need a totally radical computer, dude. Take a look at this one from Dell. Look how much RAM this thing has got. And the DVD drive, too? You can watch all the latest titles from Blockbuster with this baby. Dude, you're getting a Dell. See, that's not hard. And they probably pay per word, too.
Yuli, please try to be open-minded. These businesses have been kind enough to still compensate you for promoting their product. It's a special thing that they agreed to let you be a spokesperson. They see you as a pillar of the community.
I'm seriously baffled as to how they got that impression.
Let's be positive, Yuli. Here, I have your first ad read. It is for a Ravioli Randy's Rodeo and Ravioli Restaurant.
This is just great. Another year of Yuli being a punchline. There is no way that is real.
I assure you it is. See, I even have a picture of the business owner.
Boris, this is a Polaroid taped onto notebook paper. This greasy man in a cowboy hat could be anybody. This picture also looks like it was taken inside of a porta potty.
I applaud this upstart's effort. We should only hope to get half as much with our promotion.
I cannot believe what I'm hearing. Fine, give me the damn paper. I'll do the read, but it's only because you and the council are doing this for me. Do you ever find yourself Randy for ravioli? This is disgusting.
I admit, this isn't the best way to start an ad, but keep reading. I'm sure it gets better.
God almighty. Do you ever find yourself Randy for ravioli? Have you ever desired your own ravioli rodeo? Then mosey on down to Randy's Ravioli Rodeo and Ravioli Restaurant, where every weekday night we have a raucous rodeo in our remodeled rumpus room. Saturdays are bottomless ravioli. Your choice of meat pocket to be enjoyed to your heart's content? Bring the kids and get them a picture with Titan, our live wild bull dressed as Santa Claus. This place is a fever dream. Randy's Ravioli Rodeo and Ravioli Restaurant on North Highway 97, across from the Sanchez Landfill, opened Monday through Saturday, closed on Sundays in honor of the Lord's Day. Oh, they even have a jingle, it looks like.
Truly, I will take this one.
Sure, Boris. Knock yourself out.
Ravioli Randy's the randiest radio in the ravioli world. So, Yuli, how do you think our sponsor's business would fare?
I think if they close their doors now, they'll save themselves the embarrassment. Not to mention a whole world of lawsuits when jolly old Saint Nick inevitably tramples a group of children.
Yuli, your optimism is contagious. I'm excited too.
Looks like Ravioli Randy isn't the only one who needs his head checked. Speaking of check, as long as the checks don't bounce, we'll keep this stunt alive. Anyway, on this week's episode, the Halloween season kicks off when a group of camp counselors think they're in for a summer of gallivanting and premarital sex, but all end up butchered one after the other by an unexpected assailant. It's the slasher that kicked off the 80s, Friday the 13th. So stay tuned, boys and ghouls. The Radcast will be right back.
Goody care blood, ain't ya?
No,
you'll never come back again.
Too
it's got a death curse.
Oh, perfect.
You know, I'm not afraid to say this, but I don't think it's against God to think Bigfoot exists.
That's a nice callback to the last time we had you on the show for Halloween episode, Dave.
Which one? That was
Sleepaway Camp. Yeah. Welcome back into the Radcast, everybody. We are finally in the midst of the Halloween season. Mm. We are so excited for multiple reasons. Yuli and Boris are back.
They are back. What wonderful opportunities they've been given.
I cannot believe they have sponsors before we do. Yuli wouldn't have a job without us.
their reputation precedes them. It was an eventful season last year.
Yeah, exactly. But we are so happy to be back with the Radcast Halloween. Yep. It's been a couple years, and we're so happy to have a couple guests back on the show. We'll get to them here momentarily. Thank you all for joining us. We are talking the slasher that essentially defined what the slasher was.
I would say it started the genre off.
Yeah.
Because obviously there's Black Christmas and there was Halloween, but those were more suspense, and those don't really, I don't know.
It's before that you could really define what would soon be labeled as the earmarks of a slasher. Yeah. And Friday the 13th started it off, and throughout the entirety of the 80s, there was a myriad of copycats, some better than others, not to mention all the sequels from Friday the 13th. If you listen to our first year of Halloween shows on the Radcast, we actually ranked our favorite Friday the 13th. We ranked all the Friday the 13th.
Yeah, so we touched a little bit on this one.
But today we're talking about the very first one, and there's a reason for that, which we'll get here momentarily. But Matt, why don't you let everyone know that even in the Halloween season, where they can still find us?
You find us in a graveyard. No.
Yeah, baby.
You can find us on social media. We are just on Instagram, and that is at the Radcast. So cast is spelled with a K. The Radcast is all one word. And then you can find us on all major podcast platforms, Spotify, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, and then wherever appropriate, make sure to rate, review. It really helps us out.
Mm-hmm, exactly. So let's just jump in to the meat of everything. One of them is making his return. The other one of our guests is making her Radcast debut.
Really?
Yeah. If you listen to Sucktastic Cinema, you heard one of our guests. She made two appearances. One of them was about Suburban Commando with her husband, who is a longtime guest and friend of the show and supporter. But also, she had her own episode of Cat in the Hat.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Stephanie Little making her first appearance on the Radcast.
Hello.
Yes.
I'm glad to be here.
Glad to have you. Mm-hmm. Especially for... we'll get into why we had you guys on for this episode.
And then also... making his return, you've heard his voice a couple times on the show. If you listen to 5 Weeks of Fright 2, he was on Sleepaway Camp. He kicked off the Halloween season with us. He also made a couple of appearances on Sucktastic Cinema. Mm-hmm. Ladies and gentlemen, making his fifth podcast appearance as a guest, Dave Little is back.
Hey, hello. Dave.
Hi,
here
Dave.
He is.
Hello.
That's Dave.
There he is. Hi. That's Dave Little. Yes, Dave and Stephanie are back on the show. If you listen to Sucktastic Cinema, they were on Suburban Commando.
That was a blast for a number of reasons.
That we recorded in their apartment, which is where we're at now, giving another go at our new microphone setup, our traveling setup. Yeah. If you listen to us, if you heard our Mighty Ducks episode last week with Chris Haney, thank you for listening. Yep. If you haven't, go give it a listen. We tried out this new setup at Matt's house. Now we're back at Dave and Stephanie's apartment, all just kind of maxing and relaxing out by the pool.
It's very nice because we don't have to be like, oh, do you have a table big enough for our mic stands and our microphones and stuff?
Yeah.
We just kind of sit around and I'm sitting on the floor right now.
Me too. I'm almost laying on my back on the floor.
Yeah, Stephanie's curled up with a blanket, just in the lap of luxury.
Taking a be real.
There you go.
Yes.
Oh, she's doing stuff for her social medias.
Ah, yes. But the reason we're retreading Friday the 13th is because we made a revelation a few weeks ago. Mm-hmm. We were talking about some of our, you know, Halloween plans, kind of at Dave and Stephanie's, wondering, you know, what are we going to watch this year? And Stephanie revealed she had never seen Friday the 13th.
Uh-huh. Yep.
So we're like, okay, but do you know the twist? And she's like, no, I don't know anything about it. I'm like, oh, we got to watch it.
Oh, man. There's then, week one right there.
Then I had the thought, I was like, we got to record this because I would love to hear her thoughts on it, watching it for the first time on the twist, having almost no knowledge about it.
It's very rare nowadays.
It is very rare, especially...
this movie to like people still don't know, like, because this is one of the most famous twists, jump scares, whatever, in horror movie history.
Yeah.
And so it's like finding a unicorn.
Yeah.
Someone who, even if they hadn't watched this movie, someone who doesn't know what the twist is.
Yeah.
Well, and there were so many times I'm like, is that the twist?
Right.
Yeah. Nope. That was a twist.
It was, well,
not the twist.
Well, it was getting close to the end. You're still, and I had to like, I was like, I can't say anything.
I can't say no or yes.
I can't say no or yes.
Or not
but also
yet.
My silent.
Like, that is a twist.
Yeah, it's like there's a couple in here.
But then it's like, well, my silence is speaking louder than.
Yeah.
Because it was getting to like the last 5 minutes. She's like, is this the twist? I was like, what am I going to say? Yeah, I mean, it is, but like.
But then also, we found out right before we started the movie, Dave was like, yeah, I've never seen this either.
And, what?
Because like, you've seen sequels.
Yeah.
You've seen some of these. We've watched three together before.
Yeah, I definitely knew the twist.
Yeah, Dave knew the twist.
Anybody that's seen Scream knows the twist of this movie.
Yeah. Oh, well, yeah.
But
yeah.
Also, like, you watch, like, the Watch Mojo videos and anything like horror movies. Like, in any of those videos, they're going to spoil that.
Yeah.
I mean, the movie's 42 years old. Mm-hmm. But still, there's some people who still don't know. Because sometimes I have to remind myself, well, not everybody's kind of, even though you don't watch horror movies, not everybody's, like, always paying attention to pop culture stuff.
Exactly.
Like, we had it spoiled for us, like, when we were 11, 12 years old on those 40 greatest horror or scariest movie moments on Bravo.
And at that time, I didn't care because I was like, I don't want to, I was just scared. Like, I don't want to watch any horror movies. So it was like, so by the time I started watching horror movies, I was like, oh, yeah, I know. I know what the little twist is.
Yeah.
I spoiled my favorite horror slasher film movie before I even seen it. Because I was on Watch Mojo too much.
Yeah.
For the biggest twist.
But
and yes, Jason was one of Mrs.
At some point we're gonna this Friday the 13th.
It's okay.
Like,
if people are listening,
I'm just
more than likely seen it.
The list I saw was top twists, and I've spoiled a lot of horror movie slasher.
Yeah.
And Sleepaway Camp turned out to be my favorite movie.
Yeah.
And I actually talked to you guys before I even about Sleepaway Camp watched it. So, and it turned out to be great.
Well, what's cool, though, is another way to kind of make it new for yourself is to see if you can pick up where, like, any hints or any evidence that, oh, that kind of shows that, like, in Sleepaway Camp, oh, there's evidence that it was Angela. Mm-hmm. Or in this one, there's evidence it was Mrs. Voorhees.
Yeah. Now that you know what the reveal is, you can... not reverse engineer, but as you watch it again, you can pick out the little things that you wouldn't have noticed because you're not thinking in terms of what they're building to.
Yeah.
So you can go back and be like, there's a little reveal if you're paying attention. I can see how that could foreshadow that kind of thing.
But before we get further into your guys' your first impressions watching the movie, and then kind of Matt and I have seen the movie, the first one, a couple times. We've seen the sequels more. But also, we've watched the documentary Crystal Lake Memories a bunch.
Yeah.
And over the years, I've watched a ton about the making of the movie. So once we get all these different perspectives, we'll get to those different perspectives here in a second. But first, I'm going to do some of the basics of the movie. So Friday the 13th was released May 9th, 1980, directed by Sean S. Cunningham, starring Betsy Palmer as Mrs. Voorhees, Adrian King as Alice, Jeanine Taylor as Marcy, Kevin Bacon as Jack.
The
Kevin Bacon of 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon fame.
Mm-hmm.
Harry Crosby as Bill, the son of Bing Crosby. Lori Bartram as Brenda. Mark Nelson as Ned. And Peter Brower as Steve Christie. So the Steve Christie who's trying to open Camp Crystal Lake back up.
Camp Christie Lake, as he's trying to call it.
Exactly. with Robbie Morgan as Annie and Walt Gorney as Crazy Ralph.
It's got a death curse.
A special mention, special effects, to the great Tom Savini.
Who revolutionized special effects.
Came back for number four when he thought he would be able to put Jason to rest. And a box office of $39.7 million on a $550,000 budget. So this made
It was successful.
Also, it goes to show that that's why that it showed that there was money.
Yeah.
In what would become known as the slasher genre.
Yeah, this specific genre.
So that's why it had so many copycats and so many of the tropes of slashers started with this because this made money.
Yeah. This took. And we'll get it. Sean Cunningham basically said, I ripped off Halloween.
Yeah.
So it took things about Halloween and that idea of the one killer in the shadows and stuff.
Right.
And kind of, did its own thing. And then off of this, we'd get that slasher genre.
Yeah. So I'll do a quick what was on the VHS, Friday the 13th. This is really before VHS was popularized and things were widely put on VHS. There were a couple re-releases in the late 90s, but it's just the Paramount logo. Mm. So I just took the Freddy vs. Jason VHS back in 2003.
All right.
So an advertisement for the Freddy vs. Jason soundtrack, which had a lot of Slipknot Power Man 5000.
Yeah, it's like some new metal on there. Yeah, like Coal Chamber.
Yeah.
Dave, you're a big Coal Chamber guy, aren't you?
I have no idea who that is.
it's Santa Claus's band.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Coal Chamber.
A bunch of bad...
This is for all the naughty people out there.
We're a bunch of bad hombres.
So that's North Pole speak.
Yeah. So it's very reminiscent of a lot of the metal that was out in the early 2000s. Coming soon to theaters, Willard with Crispin Glover. The Texas Chainsaw Massacre remake with Jessica Biel. And then finally a promo for just the DVD format. So as we said, this was your guys' first time watching the movie. Stephanie, was this ever a movie unless we forced you to watch it? Was it ever a movie that you would ever come around to watching? Because you're not opposed to horror movies.
I'm not opposed. However, my genre of horror movies that kind of intrigued me are intense demonic possession.
Really?
You know, yeah, like those scenes where you're in a bathtub and then those arms, you know, take your head. Pull your head under the water.
Yeah.
All that fun stuff.
A Thursday night, you mean?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Same. Yeah. I'm glad we have the same Thursday nights.
You said you prefer those ones.
I do. Because I don't know why.
Interesting.
Me neither.
I think she
actually, you know what? I think what it is I don't know how to describe this.
Is it because there's kind of more historically on the books when it comes to like possession, that it seems like there, it's almost more frightening that it's
something that could happen. Yeah. Kind
I think
of thing.
That it's almost a fate worse than death, being possessed.
Yeah,
I'd rather be killed than be possessed by or haunted.
But you would say Pinocchio is a whore.
Okay, the donkey scene is
that is terrifying.
No, that is horrible. So I think what I think there are fates worse than death, and so when I see a movie where just everyone dies, I don't find it horrible. I mean, that would suck.
Yeah.
Right.
That'd be horrible.
Yeah.
But turning into a donkey would be even scarier.
This is true.
Yeah. That is the best part of that movie. Yes, it is. It's the Pleasure Island is the best part.
That's because you're a jackass, Dave.
Yeah, yes. Exactly. Like, oh,
you can
my
identify with
I'd be okay with it.
I think that I would rather die than be possessed.
so see, one thing can still talk and has his agency about him.
Dave the donkey.
This one could still talk, put him
Dave.
Away.
Dave the donkey.
He turned into a donkey. It's perfect.
Guy. You know those donkey children were taken captive, right?
Yeah, they were in cages. It's
they
horrible.
They were fed to that whale. Why did they take him to... That was Jonah. That was the Bible.
It's
when Jonah turned into a donkey.
Yeah, it is in Leviticus. They talked about Pleasure Island.
You need Sodom and Gomorrah.
Yeah, exactly. Welcome to Bible Talk. I just think it's so funny that, like, there were several...
You're not really a jackass, Dave.
There were several moments in this movie we were watching it, and Tom Savini's makeup effects, we'll get into why they're so realistic looking, they're pretty gruesome, especially for the time, and... Like, they would happen, and Stephanie's like, oh, no, get it off the screen,
the
screen. Yeah. But then you're like, I'm into a demonic possession. What?
I prefer those.
Yeah. What?
Yeah, I like the stuff that keeps me up at night.
Oh, yeah. Dave, you are more in the wheelhouse of a slasher.
Like an 80s slasher. Yeah.
So I'm curious as to why, maybe it's the same reason that Matt and I took a while to get around to the first Friday the 13th, but you had obviously seen sequels before this.
Yeah. Jason is definitely a cool character.
Mm-hmm.
The one thing I do not like about the franchise is I do not like the fucking title Friday the 13th.
Really?
Yeah. What does that have to do with bad luck? Nothing.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
I think it's something that started out as like, it was supposed to be kind of like, and this is indicative of a lot of the promoting beforehand as well. I think Sean S. Cunningham picked Friday the 13th to kind of jump out at you, because in 1979, before they even started shooting, he took a full page ad out in Variety and just put Friday the 13th. Yeah. It's kind of like what they did with Ghostbusters when they just like, before anybody knew anything about the movie, you just see Friday the 13th and it piques your interest. And Friday the 13th traditionally is seen as like an unlucky
day.
Bad luck. Yeah. So I think within the vein of it being, you know, these counselors or these characters, unlucky day, and then they just stuck with it.
I didn't realize Jason was deformed looking until I saw Jason versus Freddy, which is
really,
yeah,
I agree with you guys. It's more of a Freddy Krueger movie.
Yeah, yeah, we've said that in the past. Yeah, it's more of like a Freddy movie.
Like I said,
yeah.
I'm a fan.
thanks, Dave.
Thanks.
Yeah, I've listened to the 5 Weeks of Fright several times.
Yeah,
you know, work a lot of doubles. You know, don't judge me.
He's also played it in the house so that I can hear.
Ah, yeah,
well, and been like, Stephanie, did you hear that part? And then rewound it.
Stephanie,
awesome.
Did you?
Yeah, did you see what Count Yuli said?
I prefer Count Boris.
Yes,
Dave, I do.
Dave.
Count Boris has his fans.
I'm very appreciative. Dave is a big fan of Count Yuli. So
I do like him. I don't.
Yes. Cool. Oh, of course. Of
but
course.
I don't dislike. But Count Boris.
Boris is Boris.
What do you like about Count Boris? Just curious. So
this
I can read
about
to him.
Knock,
yeah.
Knock,
Yuli
and Boris.
Knock. What was it? Yeah, that knock knock joke.
Yep. Well, I think
Winter Solstice.
Well, I think also Friday the first one, it's hard to put yourself back in the shoes of someone watching it at that time for the first time because Jason Voorhees, especially because in the second one, he had the potato sack over his head.
Yeah.
Yep.
But first off, he's in the second one.
That was the first one I watched with you guys.
So the second one, and then the third one, he gets the hockey mask. And Jason with the hockey mask is just iconic.
How cool is Uber Jason and Jason X, though?
Oh, I mean.
Oh, like the Mecha Jason or whatever?
Aesthetically, it looks awesome. Really cool. The movie is hokey as shit.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that's what kind of makes the stuff fun.
Oh, yeah.
But
in the sequels, it doesn't take itself too seriously.
Before it started hitting all those earmarks of not just a slasher movie but would be known as like the Friday the 13th slasher movie of like the counselor body count, it's hard to get an interest in the first one, especially when you find out Jason is only in this by name, and then at the end the twist, spoiler alert, this is like zombie demonic looking
kid Jason
pops up and brings Alice down into the lake with him.
And it's a dream, but then it was so successful they did the second one and they brought Jason back as an adult. So
then he was an entity.
So there's so many ways that the Jason entity, the iconography of Jason stays alive. So it's tough with all that being said, and you revisit it. Now, the first one, you almost just do it just so you can say you've seen the first
one.
There are merits to the first
one.
I don't know if you guys agree with that. It is kind of a slower movie. It kind of hangs on shots a little long.
Yeah, there's definitely things in there to where there's several moments where you're like, they could have cut this shorter. They could have trimmed
like
5
minutes on a river.
Yeah.
Like, that was a beautiful shot.
The part where they cut back to, what's his name? The guy that's a pretty... Tough, ain't you?
Crazy Ralph.
When he rides his bicycle, and they cut back to him, they let him ride his bike all the way off the scene.
Yeah,
like 6 minutes of that woman making tea.
Yeah, exactly. It's 6 minutes of Kevin Bacon making love.
Yeah, that too.
That was fine.
I'm all right with that. Actually, I wanted that to be longer. Actually,
yeah,
I want to see more of Kevin making bacon.
I think it's the legend of the first one, kind of that classic twist that has people coming back to it. The movie has its merits, for
sure. Yeah, absolutely.
But when you're out for like a fun 80s horror movie, you want to see kind of Jason dicing people up.
When you're used to, especially Dave, who started the series on a sequel.
Same for us.
Yeah, we started on a sequel.
We started with like... three.
Yeah, when you jump in and it's out and it's just like fully formed, like this is its identity, and then you go back to where it started and it feels different.
Yeah.
So I understand how it's difficult for people to watch just older horror movies in general.
Yeah.
Because what we have now, it's just through the years, it's gotten crazier and crazier. So if you go back to this or like Godzilla or Frankenstein and stuff like that, you're like, oh, this is kind of dumb. But it helps. It's fun to put yourself back to when it came out, understand why it's still like historically significant.
Because the word of mouth was crazy.
Yeah, exactly. This is before the internet. This is before like VHS was huge and stuff like that. The only time you could see this stuff was in the theaters.
And there's
the only time you could hear about it is people who saw it in theaters.
And there's a reason it gave birth to all this, especially for the next three, 4 years, including Sleepaway Camp.
Yeah.
Like, it gave birth to everything that hit all those same tropes because of the TNA and the ultraviolence and all this stuff.
Yeah, so of course, like, what it would become is like how crazy, because eventually the sequels, it was the story was secondary and it was just how creative can we make the kills, how many boobies can we put in there, stuff like that. So when you dial it back to this, it's like, this is kind of boring, but really in its own right, like you said, it has merit. It kind of set the tone for all this stuff. It, you know, without the quote unquote tame version of what we would get in here, we wouldn't get like
Sleepaway Camp.
Exactly. We wouldn't get these this crop of makeup artists who would get these jobs on these movies and like they could hone their craft on it.
Before this, Stephanie, had you ever seen any of the Friday the 13th before?
None of them. No, but I have, you know, I've watched those campy movies like Cabin in the Woods, Sleepaway Camp.
Campy as in cheesy or campy as in taking place at a camp?
Both.
Ah, yes.
Both all in
Perfect.
One.
Perfect.
All in one.
Yeah.
But it makes me, so was this one of the, because I don't know my history.
That's all right.
Is this We're what kind of caused, or, you know, is this what kind of started the camp setting?
I think that's definitely a part of it, because I think a lot of people, because there was also The Burning that came out a couple years after this, or a year or so after this.
Yeah.
That was one of the first like big copycats of this. I think there were movies that took elements and maybe copied some of the kills. Yeah. And then some movies are just straight up put it in a camp setting.
Yeah. It makes me think, like, how did no one come up with this idea earlier? Because camp, there's so much you can do at a horror movie in camp.
Yeah.
First of all, it's fun. Yeah. Second of all, it's in the woods. There's a lake. You can,
It's very remote. You feel isolated.
Yes.
Which is fine, but then when bad stuff starts happening, you feel helpless.
Yes.
And so it's
And then, they made one movie of it, and everyone's like, hey, that's a good idea. Let's, of course,
a camp.
Let's do that too.
Who didn't go to summer camp when they were a kid, kind of thing?
Yeah.
And it started in 1980s when this idea.
Exactly.
I would have expected it to be earlier.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Like Frankenstein goes to camp.
Yeah. Frankenstein. Yeah.
Ernest goes
tries
to Frankenstein.
Tries to make friends.
Yeah, exactly. That's the horror of it.
Frankenstein goes to camp.
He just wants to make friends, but he's.
Friends and doesn't fit in.
I'm just a monster.
Go in the lake.
He's a diva.
Yeah, exactly.
He has a sequel called Friday the 13th going on 30 years.
he's wearing the old-timey bathing suit, but he's still got his big-ass boots on.
He looks like Dick Van Dyke and Chitty Chitty Bang Bang.
Yeah, that's what I'm getting at. Yeah.
Why don't I fit in?
Friday the 13th year. He's just a mermaid.
He's Frankenstein the mermaid. But so just still on first impressions, when the movie opens, it's a flashback. So what, just in general, what were some of your guys' first impressions of like it? Because it opens on a flashback in 1958 and those two counselors get killed, and then we see who we think is the main character, Annie, kind of walking through this little town asking about Camp Crystal Lake, which everybody looks at her sideways.
Yeah.
Disappointing when you find out that you think the main character. I don't know.
That
kinda
too.
Kind of disappointing there.
I mean, I was thinking because it, you know, shot in my face. 1958. It's like, oh, my dad was born that year, and then I'm like, oh God.
He's old.
Horrible. That's
horrifying.
Yeah. The cinematics were a little POV. Shaky, and it was kind of giving me a headache.
Well, not at that, but it was, like, creepy. Like, if I were to walk into an abandoned cabin like that, like, the sink looked terrifying. Yeah.
You know,
like,
that reminded me of, I bet they were like, okay, kids, you're going to be in a movie, and we're going to walk through with the cameras and just act like you're asleep. That's what that kind of probably was.
Yeah, like, at the very beginning, we get something that continues throughout the movie. It's the first person POV shot of the killer. I wish people would stop going
because it's
even people who I figured would know it's ki mama is they go
wait, what was there was symbolism to that, what was that?
So it's Harry Manfredini, when he created the noise and he based on Mrs. Voorhees, she's got this inner voice going, killer mommy, killer. And so he just went to a mic and went ki ma,
something called the echo plex,
and it just came out ki 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 ma ma So it came from kill, mom. And so it's ki, ma, ki, 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 ma, ma. So, but the way it echoes, it sounds like chi, 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 chi.
I feel like it might have evolved into that probably. In the sequels.
Probably.
But also, like, the character, if you're not really paying attention to the movie, you don't really connect with any of the characters.
Not really.
Except for Alice, maybe.
Yeah. Well, I guess if you watch it now, you're like, oh, there's Kevin Bacon. And, you have his attention now. But, that's the thing about horror movies. Like, you don't really get attached to characters because you, it's almost inevitable they're going to get killed.
Mm-hmm.
Well, sometimes, though, they do good at, like, or they do well with character development.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But, I mean, the only thing I know about, well, I want to call her Brenda. I don't know that lady's name. The strip poker. There's
they play strip Monopoly. What the hell?
Is
that the twist?
That's the only thing I think of that character is she's the one that suggested that they play Monopoly.
Yeah.
Like, they don't do much. She's like, but let's strip. Well, it's that. Okay. Her only character trait is
that, and she doesn't eat meat.
Yeah,
she almost gets hit by. Well, she does get hit by an arrow eventually.
Well, later,
but in the beginning, she almost gets hit by an arrow.
Oh yeah, she hangs up an archery thing.
That's yeah,
mm-hmm. and then one of the
building. Good, yay.
Then one of the girls asks what the significance of vitamin C is. As you can see, very engaging characters.
Yeah. The thing,
she says something about like the nitrates.
Yeah, it's and they almost it's, they have little things.
Yeah,
like I don't want to keep saying what's her face,
right?
But like the one who has sex with Kevin Bacon, she kind of does these
the
like
cute one. Sorry.
I mean, I think Karen or what's her Alice is cute.
Here. Alice, yeah. Brenda.
I think Brenda's cute.
The female characters are attractive.
That's the thing is they're not like how those characters would become is like kind of brain dead horn dogs,
mm-hmm.
like they just. They feel like just kind of regular young adults.
It's
in
the cute again. One because she's the only cute one. But what?
No, man. All of them are cute. We're not basing it.
I said one looks like my mom.
So that's why you don't want to say they're all cute. Okay. God, what is her name?
Brenda.
Helga.
Sarfus.
Marcy.
So Marcy, she has these a couple moments to where she like she kind of channeled old Hollywood, like Barbara Stanwyck.
Yeah,
to
like,
where,
like Catherine Hepburn.
Yeah, because they're all theater kids in this movie. So
do they play theater kids in this
movie? No. They're just
the
all
actors
the
are
actors
theater
are just
kids.
Theater kids.
Yeah.
So she has a couple of those moments, and of course Kevin Bacon, and then you see a few character traits applied to people, like
Ned's kind of like a goofball.
Ned's the goofball, but he's not like annoying like a Shelley would be in the third movie.
Yeah, it's not overblown, over the top. These are kids that you would see in the halls of high school at that time.
Yeah, it's almost like they're not becoming these. Characters that slasher movies would be known for
caricatures.
Yeah, they're just there. Yeah. And I think that's what kind of like makes it. Some people might find a little boring if you're used to like this type of movie. I don't know. It's tough to connect with people you don't really know a lot about. But that being said, would you say that these characters were boring per se?
Yeah,
I would not say boring. I mean, okay.
I mean, Dave.
We'll circle back to Dave. Say boring.
Oh, sorry.
I wouldn't say boring because I mean, it's a little spicy that girl was like, "Oh, let's play strip Monopoly."
Right.
That's not normal, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, it could be normal. Oh. I don't know. Maybe I'm part of the wrong crowd.
Yeah. I mean, you were saying that after prom, you guys would go and watch Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
And drink soda pop.
Yeah, and bean dip.
Eat
and
bean dip.
Yeah. You'd be home by 9 o'clock.
It'd be a farty party.
It'd
be a farty party.
But yeah, so I mean, there were some spicy traits. I think the only, I wouldn't say forgettable, but the one I would forget the easiest is probably the one that was overshadowed by Kevin Bacon, because I was just focusing on Kevin Bacon.
The guy or the girl?
The
The girl Kevin Bacon.
I meant like
the girl. Oh yeah, the female. So like any
like
scene
his
that
girlfriend.
She, yeah. So any
okay.
scene she was Mark. In, I was just focusing on Kevin Bacon. So I did kind of, you know, that as does any other female.
You big Kevin Bacon fan?
You like you
be.
Like Tremors, do you?
I mean, my dad made me watch Footloose with him every Sunday.
Sit out,
when
watch
I was
with me.
Since 96.
Never mind, the Broncos are on.
I mean, he would watch it, but infantile amnesia, I don't remember the first 3 years of it.
Infantile amnesia? What is
so
that?
So it is when you're, it's so every infant doesn't have, so your hippocampus, which is where your memories are created, it doesn't fully develop until you're 3.
And you were 2
when I was a kid.
Unless you had a, I mean, unless you have like some abnormal hippocampus like you claim to have.
I do. I remember them carrying me.
Okay.
I remember the doctor.
I'm not kidding.
I remember being born.
I remember being pushed
in
a stroller.
Really?
And everything. I'm
really?
Not kidding. I remember my dreams from kindergarten.
Okay, that's normal.
Yeah.
Because you're not 3.
Would one of them be a dream of it raining heavy and it turning into blood, like Marcy talked about?
Like Marcy in this one.
Oh.
No.
Well, okay. Well, let's talk about you thinking these characters are boring, then.
Yeah.
I don't think you just get attached to the character. The characters, besides maybe one of them that stands out, and that's the goofy one that I said looks like Tony Khan.
Oh, yeah. Tony Khan from AEW.
Yeah.
Would you agree he's the one that stands out?
He kind of looks like Tony Khan. Yeah.
And then there's a cute one.
He stands out. Kevin Bacon only stands out because
he's Kevin Bacon.
Alice stands out because she's the final girl. And then, of course, Mrs. Voorhees chooses scenery whenever she's up there. But, yeah, Ned stands out mainly because he has such an in-your-face, like, personality quirk.
Yeah.
And Ned rhymes with dead.
That's true.
And he dead first.
He's the first of that crew
of
to
that
die.
Crew, yeah, because then What's-Her-Face died in the woods.
Mm-hmm.
Who, the little swerve, the little red
Annie.
Herring.
Annie, yeah.
She's the Janet Leigh from Psycho.
And that elicited the type of response from you, Stephanie, right? Mm-hmm. You were like, no, she's not going to die. Because she first comes on screen and she starts talking to the dog who's going to who's sitting at the gas pump, who's waiting for a car to come so he can fill up its tank.
He's like, Lady, I'm on the clock.
And Dave was like, well, there's our main character. And that's where Dave was like, I've never seen this movie either. And I was like, yeah. Oh, I thought you were just saying that like as a joke.
You talk a lot, you know?
Yeah.
During movies.
But yeah, because after that, because you were cracking jokes, Matt. And then after when Dave's like, there's your main character. And then Dave's like, I've never seen either. Matt's like, oh, shoot, I'll shut up then too, because you both need to watch it.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, Annie's death, but then, Ned was the first out of all of them.
To be fair, are any horror movie characters besides the greatest slasher film of all time have good characters that you get attached to?
There are some movies that do better than others to where, like, you get attached to
Tommy Jarvis.
Some of them. Tommy Jarvis. I think 4 does a good job most of those characters.
Yeah, 6.
Or is that 6?
Well, Tommy Jarvis starts in 4. Corey Feldman 5.
Corey Feldman is Tommy Jarvis?
Yeah. In 4, yeah. Yeah. And then he's in
Feldberg
5.
Takes down
and
Jason?
Then 6 is Tom Matthews. 6 is, I think, the best Tommy Jarvis.
Yeah, so 3.
I'm a hound dog.
Yeah, exactly. 3 different Friday the 13th movies. 3 different Tommy Jarvises. Yeah.
But
Tommy Jarvis
but
actors.
You almost don't tune in for some sort of connection to the character. You tune in to see how over the top and hokey they are. Mm. Which again, that hadn't been established yet. So up to this point, this is a serious take on what they can do with $550,000.
Yeah.
So they're not thinking about giving just this hokey personality and this cheesy dialogue. They're Sean Cunningham and Victor Miller, who wrote it, are focused on making of a film.
Yeah.
So it's so when you want that hokiness and over the top, it becomes a little harder to watch something that's a little more plotting.
Oh,
like
Well, and no, they couldn't have foreseen this.
No, of course.
Exactly.
And so, exactly. Go
as
ahead,
a self-contained movie, it still works.
I enjoyed the movie.
Yeah, of course.
It's just the characters aren't very you know.
Watch The Exorcist. The little girl in The Exorcist.
Here we go.
You will become attached to her because she's
I really like the ending of The Exorcist. I like how they ended that movie.
I like when it was over.
Yeah.
Yes.
I'm not into that.
I liked how they solved that problem.
I don't like that stuff.
They do really good at, because they say, you know, it's like the sweet little girl. Yeah. And
from beginning to end, or beginning to that part where they finally kill the demon, that I can't watch.
Oh,
but
sorry, my bad for an entirely different movie.
That's okay.
No, please.
But, yes.
Yeah,
we keep on bringing up
Jason, too.
Jason's.
That is someone I became attached to.
That's just so funny to me.
It's just it's just tough when it's almost like I would even equate it to a Halloween 3, which a lot of people, I like Halloween
Kane
3
Hodder.
For what
is
it
the
is.
First one?
No, Halloween. Kane Hodder was Jason in a few of them.
I'm true.
He started in 7.
Yeah. Halloween 3 is the one without Michael Myers.
Yeah. So, like, but the thing is, at least people had something, an established idea of Michael Myers beforehand.
Yeah.
But I guess, again, if you're watching this retroactively, you have an established idea
of
Jason.
Like, where's Jason?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I wasn't paying attention. You were talking about Halloween. I was thinking Halloween-ish movies.
Oh,
like Halloween
right.
movies.
Yeah.
Yeah, I knew Mike Myers was a killer.
Yeah.
No, it was Mike Myers' mom.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it's a fun twist, but also, like, if you're someone who, like, is used to something, like a big brute like Jason, you're like, that old lady?
Yeah.
But I think that's where some of, like, the relatability, you're supposed to kind of empathize with her, because
people came up to Betsy Palmer and be like, I mean, granted, you killed all these people, but I related to it because, like, I understand why. Like, under these counselors' quote unquote watchful eye, instead of watching your son, who wasn't a very good swimmer, he drowned. He's dead because they were making love, you know, over. And so I understand your motivation. I don't condone it, but as, like, if someone's like, as a mother myself, as a father myself, like, if that happened to my child, I can't say that I wouldn't at least think about doing the same thing.
It blew my mind, though.
Yeah.
Because I felt
like the reveal.
Well, I felt so cold. Well, I don't know if it was because she was wearing a sweater that my mom would wear.
I could see that.
Like,
yeah.
She gave that lady a hug. I'm like, oh, cool. She's safe. I feel so happy. I feel like I'm hugging this lady, too.
Yeah.
And the lady's like, I'll go in there. She's like, no, don't leave me. I'm like, yeah, don't leave her.
All.
She's so, you know, she's wearing that cozy sweater.
Yep.
And then there's the turn where she kind of, like, because I thought it was great because you kind of picked up on it, Stephanie, that Mrs. Voorhees or something up with her, because you mentioned how just super, like,
calm
she was, because she walks in the kitchen and she sees Brenda had just been thrown
Alice
through the window.
Alice is freaking out. She's like, he's dead, and she's dead, and it's like, we gotta get out of here. And it's like, oh, well, you have to tell
me. I'm not afraid.
Yeah, she's like, oh, no. Okay.
Yeah, she's like, I'm not afraid.
Yeah,
you know?
No, yeah, she sees a dead body. It's like, oh, man.
Yeah. Yep.
Who's gonna clean that up?
Yeah, exactly.
But do you think it would have benefited the movie if they introduced Mrs. Voorhees, like, in the flesh a little earlier? Do you think that would be
more of
a
twist?
A better twist?
Or do you think it would have given it away? Because once you see the characters, like, movies aren't, like, when they credit movies with characters, they're just automatic suspects when it comes
to this. That's true.
I wouldn't have caught on.
Mm-hmm.
But we've
that's fair.
That's why they, like, with Crazy Ralph, you're like, is it Crazy Ralph?
They,
you know, at the beginning with the townie who was driving
Annie
into town.
Because he's kind of like, he has this look of concern on his face as he keeps looking back at her.
And he's saying, like, creepy things like, is everyone up there going to be as pretty as you? And
It's one of those things where also, like, of the time, like,
it wasn't really seen as creepy.
It's so weird. It's kind of just a weird gray area.
So I would probably say no. I think they did right by introducing her later.
Yeah. And then also they gave her that exposition that kind of ties back to what other people have been talking about, because the truck driver, and then just how the story behind the camp and its reputation, Camp Blood, how 1957, little boy drowned, 1958, these murders started happening, 1962, a fire broke out, and Steve Christie, who's trying to open the camp back up, his parents ran the camp, and they kept trying to open it up, but they kept going bankrupt doing it because of all these mysterious things, because the truck driver's like, never caught the people who did it, or the person who did it. So it's just down to, this is just the final straw for Pamela Voorhees, that she's like, now I just got to start offing people.
Yeah.
Well, can I bring up the whole suspect thing?
Yes.
Because,
please.
Because they showed a picture of a beaver in the water.
Yeah, I was going to bring
we
up the beaver.
And we were all like,
yeah,
maybe it's the beaver.
Yeah.
So maybe, like, anything they show on the screen, it's like, is that the killer? Is that the killer?
It's a beaver driving a Jeep.
It just shows big puppet beaver hands.
Yeah,
under the bed.
His little claws with the knife.
I do get annoyed when back in the older movies, like when they're trying to find out who it is, like Scooby-Doo, it's always the least likely person.
Right.
It's almost, well, like if you watch Scooby-Doo enough, you know that it's always the person that's least likely. Mm-hmm. And then all they do is just change character totally.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, I would have gotten away with it too.
Oh, yeah. But why? What's your motivation?
So actually that is why Pamela Voorhees works the best at the end, because
exactly. That's
because
what I'm trying to get to.
You don't you don't have the, oh well, I kind
of
suspected that. You're not like leery.
Of course it's
you're
Steve
just like
Christie.
Yeah, exactly. You're
of course
not leery.
It's the truck driver.
She just comes up and you're like, who's that?
Yeah.
And then it just starts unfolding.
When she,
you're
she
like,
starts
oh,
giving that monologue.
Yeah.
And you start seeing this woman is unhinged.
It's like that's definitely someone nobody suspected, because we didn't even know who she was until just now.
Yeah.
Kind of thing.
Yeah.
And then her severed head shows back up in the second one. But
yeah.
But that's just the second one. We're talking about the first one.
Well, yeah. You're right. I agree. They... I always do this in your podcast.
No, go for it. Whatever it is.
I was just going to say, yeah, that it would have just been too obvious. Like, yeah, it's probably the least likely person to be, you know. Well, Scooby-Doo, Scooby-Doo was an old cartoon.
70s.
Movie. Yeah.
Scooby-Doo 70s. So it was before was the 70s. But as far as special effects go,
Tom Savini,
if you listen to our Sleepaway Camp episode, we talked about the special effects in there and how, just as a whole, it can be just a shit movie with like the dumbest dialogue, but they go all out on the
special effects artists. Like, we're like, practical effects, just the ingenuity that goes into it is incredible.
Like, Stephanie, you even went on all the kills. You had that audible
take it off. Take it off the screen.
Because it's so like,
bring Satan back on
the
screen.
The practical effects are so grounded that it looks real.
Yeah.
It does. The slitting of the throat. And
The
axe through the head.
I've
think you like put yourself in their situation.
Yeah.
Which is not the best thing to do
for
a horror movie, rather than jump scares.
Especially with the way Kevin Bacon went out.
Yeah,
I don't
want
to imagine that happening.
That was rough, but the axe through that person.
Yeah.
That axe went through the person's skull.
Yeah.
So that person must have really.
As Stephanie said, oh, it's an axe. Stephanie said,
oh, man.
But those are so effective because Tom Savini was a photographer during the
Vietnam
War.
Yeah.
He was a Vietnam War photographer, and just the horrors he saw in Vietnam. He said, my goal was to create something that matched the horrors that I saw in Vietnam. Like, if it didn't look realistic to me coming from like where I'm coming from and what I saw, then it's not going to work.
Right.
And so that was his goal, was to make it as realistic as possible. Yeah.
That brings a whole new meaning to it, you know? Like, how traumatic.
Yep.
That,
Oh, for
it's,
sure.
I would think it would almost be kind of, you know, this form of catharsis for him.
Probably.
Almost therapeutic to where, like, to bring that out and put it within a realm that is fiction.
Yeah.
And bring awareness almost to
exactly.
what they actually went through.
Stephanie, if you're kind of queasy by his effects, I would suggest not watching Dawn of the Dead.
No.
Because
there's more like intestines and stuff like that.
It's the definition of disemboweling people.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I'll stick
zombies.
With my demons.
Yes, there you go. Yeah.
I will. You should get a shirt made saying, I'll stick with my demons. It works on so many levels. It's like poetry. It rhymes.
Yeah, exactly. Jason Voorhees, no thanks. I'll stick with my demons. That's the thing is, like, I kind of like Steven said before, there's this incredible, like, and this number sounds staggering because it is, but when you split it up into parts, it's fine. There's a 7-hour documentary called Crystal Lake Memories that details the entire Friday 13th series. Incredible. We were talking about Corey Feldman earlier. He's kind of
the narrator.
He's not kind of, he's the narrator through it all. And Tom Savini details how he does the effects. Same with like some of the other special effects, which look like special effects. This looks pretty realistic.
Looks like if you stumbled onto a crime scene.
Yeah, exactly. And even him describing it, like he describes like this is how we did it. And then we use like toothpicks to hold our head up and stuff. And this is how we did the arrow through the neck. This is how we did the axe in the face. Even though he explains how you do it, it's done so realistically, I still kind of wince when I see it. And I know how it's done.
Like the guy,
still.
Like when Kevin Bacon is stabbed through the neck with the arrow, there's this geyser of blood that comes up.
The look on his face, too. Yeah.
Which it's cool to learn what happened there was his special effects assistant, the hose that was connected to what he was pumping the blood through broke off. So the assistant had to go up and start blowing into it. So it gushes up because he blew into it. Because
I was wondering how they did that back in the, like, what would have been the 70s because it didn't come out until 1980.
It's just, you just put in, it's that extra effort to make something look real.
Oh, yeah, and the axe to the face, it's so funny to hear Tom Savini say, like, oh, okay, cool, so do you want, like, a real axe and a fake face or a real face and a fake axe? And like, so he's like, the way his brain, it's not, like, morbid. He's just like,
this, how do you like, want to do
is,
this?
Yeah, this is real. Like this, I'm just trying to have a sense of realism with it because this is nothing compared to the real horrors that I've seen.
Yeah.
I almost miss that kind of approach with effects. If you guys ever want to do an episode, I'm just kidding, on The Exorcist, I could tell you everything they did with that.
I'll probably
and they
pass.
Was like,
I have no
oh
interest.
My gosh. Just one little thing, is, you know, when she's masturbating with a cross, there's this little pool of blood, and she's just, with food coloring, and it looks real.
Oh, I've seen enough about The Exorcist to know. I've seen enough.
I can't believe that movie got released.
But the special effects.
Oh, insane.
And same with this movie. That's kind of what I'm getting at.
Yeah,
I
miss
that approach. Mm-hmm.
I only like the way that movie ended. That's
Okay, I keep bringing it up because that's what I...
That's what you're into.
The Exorcism of Emily Rose is the scariest movie I've ever seen. I can't imagine watching
that's
that
more
one.
I'll take your guys' word for it.
Yeah.
That's more digital. I like the approach of the old-fashioned.
Yeah. Practical effects, ingenuity.
It kind of tells the style that you like. Mm-hmm. You get the scares from the things that are more true to life.
Yes.
Things that could... Actually, it's scary to think about things that you could open yourself up to and actually happen.
Yeah, like with special effects digitally now,
it's lazy.
Yeah, it feels less real.
Yeah, I saw on the remake of A Nightmare on Elm Street, there's this effect that they do in the original one where it's Freddy pushing his Freddy Krueger pushing his face against Nancy is dreaming. He's pushing his face against her wall, and it's a real easy effect. It's like. What?
The new one?
Sorry. No, the original, 84. And he's pushing his... it's just Robert Englund pushing his face against, like, an elastic wall.
Mm-hmm.
And it's real. It's actually happening.
It's lit and shot in a way to where... We won't go too deep.
We will
into
be
that.
Doing A Nightmare on Elm Street.
That part is badass.
But,
though.
But they recreated that in the remake, and it's all CGI. Yeah. It's like all the money you have, you can't create a simple effect like that.
Yeah. Yeah. No,
it
almost
takes away some of the fun and
I never thought of it that way. Yeah, you're right.
Practical effects, I think they're more effective because. You're actually interacting with your environment.
They're grounded.
Yeah, you don't have this tennis ball and a stick as a focal point where you're trying to pretend with something that isn't there. You're you have something there.
The practical way to go is better than CGI. I don't know why the modern world is so obsessed with CGI.
I don't know.
Like, Spielberg regrets not having CGI for Hook. Which ended up having beautiful sets.
They had amazing sets. Yeah. You know Hook is amazing how it is.
And then fucking George Lucas.
Yeah.
Well, I have a question as far as, because, you know, this was filmed probably in the 70s or early 80s.
Mm-hmm.
How did they do the axe? Do you guys know?
Like, the axe itself?
Axe through the head.
It was
axe through the head.
They went with a real axe and a fake face. So they took a mold.
Oh, the mold of her face.
Of her face. Because if you notice, the axe connects with the light before it's supposed to land in Marcy's face, and then she drops backwards. So it shows the weight that it's an actual axe.
That's
right. So it kind of puts you more in the moment of, like, this shit's real. And they created a mold of her face that looked close enough, and then they just had the axe go into the mold.
Yeah.
And then...
Well, it looked so real. Yeah, I mean, right? Dave, I was sitting right by Dave. He's like, oh my God.
Yeah. Yeah. And when, or they could have switched it out and put a fake axe.
Yeah.
And her, you know, Tom Savini's a wizard.
It looked so real. And
Annie's throat is slit like in the woods.
Yeah.
Like the, I mean, it's not real, but at the same time, like the way like the incision is made and then like the blood's coming out. It's
almost true that it that happens, and you might not bleed right away.
That's true.
Like it's where it just
starts, what's terrifying. And then the helpless look on her face. Yeah,
too. Mm-hmm. Because another thing that kind of puts you on edge. I talked about earlier how it's almost like mundane how everything's happening until people start getting the moments where people get killed. I think that kind of puts your guard down a little bit, because a lot of it is mundane interactions, and it's built upon the interactions of the counselors. And up to this point, the most tense thing that happened is there's this snake in the cabin
Alice
is in.
Yeah, that they actually killed.
Yeah, everybody is trying to contain it until Bill finally like takes the machete and like cuts it in pieces.
The only real casualty of the film was
the snake.
Yeah,
but it almost. The quiet and the sounds of nature, which the establishing shots are amazing.
Oh,
they're beautiful.
The scenery is scenic. Mm-hmm. It's
when
great.
It's about to start storming.
The transitions.
The transitions,
which was
great.
Finish your thought.
Of the storm. Essentially, sure, it's mundane, and you could even think it's slow and plotting and kind of boring. But if anything, it puts your guard down so that when you hear that
you're like, oh crap.
Yeah, that's how Harry Manfredini and Sean Cunningham intended it, that like that's supposed to indicate the killer is close. So there's a reason there's not a lot of music.
Yeah.
And also until like really Alice versus Mrs. Voorhees, and that's when it's just wall to wall music.
And when music drops out in movies anyway, the desired effect is to create tension.
So it's jarring and disturbing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I would say that's one of the things that kind of the slow nature had.
It makes it more relatable. Mm-hmm. It's like, I've been to a camp like that with friends. Mm-hmm. You know, it makes it like more everyday life.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And when
go to summer camp.
You didn't go to summer camp.
I didn't grow up watching this movie.
Why the hell did we have you on the show?
No, I don't know.
That's a throwback to sleepaway camp.
And it's one of those things, because it's a movie, you don't even think about it. But when you think about it, like, day-to-day life is kind of boring. Like, it's very routine. It's very mundane. Yeah.
Essentially, these counselors are supposed to be there to help Steve get the camp set up and do cleaning. That's boring.
At some points, you forget you're watching a horror movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it just feels like regular people, like, chilling out kind of thing.
Summer camp is also, like, I think the horror movies like to take something that's really cool and then turn it into something scary.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, at summer camps, they do like these bonfires where they tell spooky stories and stuff. So
it's kind of like that come to life. And then
that's the other thing. Yeah. That's what scared the shit out of me as a kid with like camp. And
so I mean, that's the original horror movie or horror happenings at camp are these scary
stories. Yeah.
The urban legends, the hook man.
Yeah.
You know, the you got the passenger in your back seat. Ugh. You know, I don't like thinking about it.
I still think about that stuff.
Especially since it's nighttime. I'm going to be leaving after this.
Yeah, exactly.
Driving by myself. Don't want to think about
it. They even use it as like in the second movie opens up in a campfire. A horror campfire story detailing the events of the previous summer, or is like a couple summers ago.
Four opens up with two and then shows all the first three.
What I'm thinking of.
Paul in the second one, the guy who's running the camp, later on in the first act is when he's talking
that's
about
what I'm thinking
Jason.
Of. The fourth one opens up with the second, from that scene from the second one.
In the second one, Paul around a campfire is telling the story, the horror story of Camp Crystal Lake.
But like you said, those are like the original horror stories you hear growing up around like just campfire tales.
Camp is kind of a perfect setting for this if you think about it.
Because you're away from home, you're homesick, and you're isolated, and It's just like you're in the elements.
Yeah.
And you
yeah.
don't, unfamiliar
yeah.
environment.
I feel like super when you're around unfamiliar. Bonfires, you're either wanting to tell stories, yeah. open up about something,
yeah. mm-hmm.
or sing a song.
Yeah. Yeah. Don't.
I'm not kidding.
No, yeah. you're right.
It's there's
you're,
something you're, about the energy of a bonfire.
You're out yeah. in the
a
dark.
Lot of people would agree with that.
In
it's
the
a,
dark.
It's true.
It's a it's a demonic energy, right, Stephanie?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's just
you're
so
making this podcast scarier.
Well, that's you know what is it? 5 weeks of fright.
Yeah,
it's true.
It's, yeah, well, it's yeah, just our Halloween mm-hmm. episodes. You know,
yeah.
supposed to be scary.
Exactly.
I guess more of a and say kind of veering away from Friday the 13th a little bit, but more from camp experience. Stephanie, you went to summer camp, correct?
Yes.
Yes.
Well,
good.
I went to sixth grade
Someone
camp.
Someone in this family did.
I think I did. Yeah, I did.
But you,
yes.
did you, when going to camp, did you have people kind of, maybe now that you've watched Friday the 13th, maybe could you connect the dots a little bit of maybe some things people would reference about like a crazy man out in the woods, like a serial killer out in the woods. Did you have those fears? Did you hear that stuff, kind of the typical stuff when you went to summer camp?
Kind of. So the two things that I can really relate to are I went to sixth grade camp
mm-hmm.
With, you know, the kids in my class who, you know, yeah, they have fun scaring people, especially the boys.
Yeah. Because
they were in a separate cabin. But then also just going to the lake with back in high school with just my high school mm-hmm. friends. And, you
yeah.
know, there was that kind of.
Yeah.
Because back in high school, we didn't do much without our parents.
Right.
And that was one of the first things. Like, yeah. oh, cool, we're on our own. You know, if one of us screams, I don't
yes.
know if many people can hear us.
Yep. Yeah.
Oh, and there's a lake. Yep. That's cool, too.
Like, we are the ones looking out for one another. We don't
yes.
have
yeah.
an adult here.
Yeah, fellow 17-year-old, hey.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you know CPR? I don't.
No, I don't either. Well,
okay.
I'm a lifeguard,
yeah.
but I
yeah.
fell asleep during that part of lifeguarding.
Cool,
yeah.
okay.
Yeah.
Is that why we brought you?
But so,
yeah,
it is that kind of that... You know, and I don't know what age group these people were in, but really any
the
age,
characters.
You know. Yeah. Any age is
young
that.
Young adult. They're a young adult.
Yeah,
probably like college.
So,
yeah.
Yeah. So even then, you know, any new environment that you're not familiar with
yeah.
and it is kind of rural.
Oh, yeah.
You know, just any change in environment
yeah.
is, a you know,
yeah.
especially something like that where and, there's a big body of water where
yeah.
you can hide bodies.
It's big body of water. I could... Hide a lot of bodies in there.
Yes.
Wonder how
bodies
shallow
beavers.
That is.
Yeah.
Anything in the wilderness has never sat well with me
nope.
since
yeah.
I was a kid. Like there are people that love going and I like going camping occasionally with like friends and stuff. But,
yeah.
But like people who will go by themselves and they're like, oh, I love I love the wilderness stuff like that. I just. Grew up with this anxiety and going to camp didn't help and hearing these stories from kids in my
mm-hmm.
bunk
mm-hmm.
that sullied me on that kind of stuff to this very day.
Yeah.
Like, cause my brain immediately goes to like worst case, like what's out there.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of thing. I don't like that. I don't know what's out there.
Well,
kind of thing.
You know, and those young middle school peers love, you know, using the whole situation of,
mm-hmm.
oh, you're out in this scary environment.
Yeah,
let me tell you
exactly.
a story about something
yeah.
that happened to someone
oh,
that's in your situation.
Yeah, exactly. And
don't
that,
die.
Exactly. And that's why the camp setting works so well for this
mm-hmm.
movie. And that's
yeah.
why it's one of those things that like a light bulb goes off. It's like, why have we never done this before?
Mm-hmm.
Or what I would actually say, this is the first thing to pamp camp. This is probably one of the first things to paint camp in this nefarious negative light
mm-hmm.
kind of thing, because summer camp, especially like in the 60s and 70s,
mm-hmm.
it's like you go for 2 months and that's where you make all these memories
yeah.
and all these great
learn new songs that you sing at the dinner table to your
mm-hmm.
parents.
Yeah,
yeah.
Exactly.
Drive them crazy.
Disown you.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But like, I guess you could really say this was the first instance of making camp out to be like, bad.
Scary.
Yeah. Scary. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and Sean Cunningham has said, like, sure, he wanted to steal from Halloween, but also he was inspired by Meatballs.
Yeah.
Kind of like this, you know.
A great camp movie.
Yeah, well, what kind of crazy stuff can we do at
mm-hmm.
a camp? He
yeah.
was inspired more by, I guess, the sexual nature of, like, what to
right.
do at, like, a camp.
Yeah.
Which, again, we mentioned before that, like, horror movies at this time were kind of like, if you wanted to be like titillated by things or to kind of see all this amorous stuff and like all this risque things, you go, horror movies were what would have that in spades.
Oh yeah.
And that kind of like started this wave of movies like this, which I know we've already said, and we kind of we could book in this episode with that idea.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm glad they used some of those wholesome factors of camp in it. It adds that dimension, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm thinking specifically of the beginning, 1958, when they're sitting by the fire.
Uh-huh. Yeah,
this is what camp's like.
Singing songs.
Michael, you know? Row Your Boat Ashore, or whatever they're singing.
But then also just when the counselors are just hanging out with one another, it's that dramatic irony.
They're just chilling.
That we have now, and people in theaters back then kind of could figure something was up based upon there was already a couple of murders that happened.
Right.
But us now, I think there's that added dramatic irony of like, you feel bad for them because they're unsuspecting. They're having a great time.
Yeah.
Like they're joking around with one another. They just want a neck out in the woods or like have sex or they want the camp hookups, all these things.
Yeah.
And then there's a butcher out there.
Mm-hmm.
There's the butcher out there.
He's a beaver.
Yep. The beaver butcher.
Yep.
I say we hit.
Dave, are you going to say something?
I was just going to say, were there other, I Know What You Did Last Summer. Was that in a camp too?
I've never seen that movie, so I don't think so.
I think they ran over the Gordon's fishermen.
Yeah, exactly.
Gordon's fishermen.
I dropped all my fish sticks. Yeah. My cans were precious antique cans.
I know the second one took place in like a resort or on a boat or something.
That was Speed 2 Cruise Control.
Yeah, you're right. But the twist, I think we mentioned earlier, the twist, Stephanie.
And Dave, you knew what the twist was,
Yeah, you knew what the twist was. Kid Jason comes out of the water and pulls Alice under, and then you were looking at me like you didn't know.
Wait, what? Kid Jason?
I didn't know that.
Okay, I think we established at the beginning you knew. I'll let you finish with Beyonce, one of the greatest videos of all time. I got it. But You knew the twist. The kid Jason pops up, brings Alice under, and he's like, the boy in the lake. He's like, there was no boy in the lake.
Did you know
there
about
was a
that,
beaver?
Did you know that it was? They tried to paint it as like a dream or whatever.
Yeah, I did not know that. Yeah. No.
Okay.
So that aspect of it, he didn't.
They added that later, didn't they?
I believe so.
Yeah.
Just to create sequel sequel opportunity. Yeah. But Stephanie, you were like, You, of course, never seen this movie. What was your reaction to just this monster popping out of the lake and bringing the main title? Because she's just in the serenity of nature with, like, the slow part of the score.
Well, and it was, like, the most beautiful song. Mm-hmm. You know, I would probably want that
this
song.
This is the most beautiful song.
You know, I could see me walking down the aisle at my wedding to that song, and then all of a sudden,
she already got... You already got married.
She didn't know that was Jason. You didn't know that was Jason.
I didn't know you're what like, was wait. Happening.
She's like, wait, is that
fast.
Kevin Bacon?
Yeah.
It's like, is that the guy that had the arrows in his face?
That's not the beaver.
Yeah. No, it's not the beaver.
You know what, though? I really wish that a beaver would have come.
Yeah. If you're just joining us, I don't know how you're just joining us in the middle of the conversation, but there was a brief shot show. Of a beaver towards
and
the beginning, and we just ran with it.
Which is great cinematography, a great production mug.
Yeah, you mentioned
it's like, it's hard to get a shot of a beaver.
Anyone can be the suspect. You see a snake. No one thought the snake was.
I'm possessed by the spirit of the snake. Union of the snake, like Duran Duran sings about.
Yeah, exactly.
But no, when I did see that, I was kind of like, wait, was that someone that, is that Kevin? I'm like, that's the twist.
Then we created this imagery. There's a beaver driving the Jeep.
Like,
in this
you kept being like, oh, her friend's body. Are they going to find bodies? What's under there? But it's just like, just watch.
Yeah.
You're like, what's this and this? Oh, is that her friend that bought it? No.
Just watch.
This is not the Jason. Right reaction.
That's Jason.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, it's not Kevin Bacon. Okay.
That's okay.
It's like, but, no, it's Jason. It's like, wait, Jason? Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. But all in all, you guys enjoyed the movie.
Yes.
Yeah, it's
you enjoyed it.
Yeah.
What? I mean, yeah, 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 yeah.
No, 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 no. If you no, just, please I'm be just honest. Kidding, I'm just yeah.
Kidding. Yeah. No, no, no. It's cool. It's cool. It's cool.
Yeah. For what it is.
Yeah.
As the start of a franchise, you could argue went off the rails.
Yeah. You enjoyed it more than Gene Siskel did.
Yeah. That's.
No, it's not a bad movie. That's
no, Gene Siskel even went as far as posting Betsy Palmer's.
Address
I mean, like, in the paper and saying send your hate mail to her.
Yeah,
like that's low.
He doxed her before doxing was a thing.
But the thing is, she got the last laugh in there because in Crystal Lake Memories, she was like, she talked about all these critics who like shit on her performance and saying, well, she should be ashamed of herself. And blah, she's like, well, those who can't do. And those who those who can do and those who can't criticize.
That isn't that all critics? Like for everything. Like the sports critics, all that stuff, the people who criticize the things are usually people who have never done the thing.
Yeah. And then so, he was applying like this, the people who make these movies hate women. It's like
that's a stretch.
Laurie Strode, Ellen Ripley, Alice, like all the except for the Tommy Jarvises, like all of the main survivors are women.
Yeah,
like it's so he was just kind of overthinking and applying his own logic to it.
It's the same people that say this is a metaphor for like premarital sex, like all the characters that have sex get killed and the virtuous ones survive and stuff.
But if we're
Alice was smoking the weed. devil's lettuce.
Surprised she didn't get possessed.
Right?
Exactly.
Stephanie's that like, I would have enjoyed that alone. A whole lot more.
That should get her killed alone.
Just get possessed like that. And then the shot of the storm. It's Kevin Bacon.
Marcy
and Jack stand on the dock. He's like, oh, storm's coming.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just the foreshadowing of a storm is coming.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
They're all about to get murderized.
Really, because but yeah, I mean that's how we see Friday the 13th. Two people who had never seen it, and two people who just know a little bit more than the other two people do. But Dave and Stephanie, this was a ball. Thank you so much for joining us.
We appreciate you guys having us.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, thanks for having us over here. Another Halloween episode. That makes two for you, Dave. So maybe, Stephanie, next year, maybe we will entertain the idea of talking about The Exorcist.
Ooh,
you know,
yes.
It's a classic.
It is a classic. And it won an Oscar. Not for Best Picture. No. Was it? It wasn't for Best Picture.
It
won an Oscar.
So. It won an Oscar.
Screenplay, maybe.
Yeah.
Well, and even if...
Director.
Even if not that, I don't know. My parents didn't expose me to many horror movies.
Yeah.
So, you could probably find one classic, and
I've
never seen it.
Yeah.
So, it could be a tradition.
We should just watch all the Friday the 13th movies.
Yeah.
Oh,
watch
that's a good
two,
idea.
Three,
Let's
four.
Let's just put it in now. I mean,
just
do it.
Right,
it's only 9:30.
Yeah, just
10.
Oops. Yeah.
And then any podcast episode of a scary movie that is classic, I probably have not watched it. So if you want a reaction video,
video.
Yeah. It's that, and then the end of the video, that split screen. Who's that? Is that her friend? Is that Kevin Bacon? Tremors? Is that the dirt worm?
We get to part seven.
Is that the beaver?
We get to part seven, and she brings up the beaver. It's like, you haven't brought the beaver since part one.
Actually, you've brought it up in every one of these episodes.
I think I see a hoof. That's not a beaver.
There's a moose this time.
A moose with a beaver tail.
Friday the 13th, part 8, it's supposed to be Jason Takes Manhattan, but it mainly gets filmed in New York, or not New York, in Canada.
A boat, yeah.
So, and on a boat, so there's moose in Canada. Either way, speaking of going off the rails, we're going off the rails here.
Thank you guys again for joining us.
This
we
was a good time.
It.
Yeah.
And thank you all for joining us for week one of this Radcast Halloween. We'll be back next week with more Boris and Yuli and another great episode and another great guest. But until the next time.
Sorry.
Be good to yourselves. Be good to each other. Because why would you want to be rude when you can be rad? We'll see you next time.
This concludes our broadcast day.